Hey everybody, welcome to Surface Level, creating a community where Black and queer folks are fearless in thought and curious at heart. I'm one of your hosts, Jordan, and today, Damon, Tony, and I are discussing the sometimes thin line between consent and assault. How do we define consent in our own sex lives? Do we think society has normalized and deprioritized sexual assault among queer men? This is No Means No.
No means no.
All right, so today we're going to talk about a topic that I don't feel like gets enough recognition and just enough of a platform in our community. And specifically, when it comes to gay Black men, I don't think we talk about it nearly enough. And that topic is sexual assault and consent. Mm-hmm. And we're joined today with a special guest to help us have that conversation. Tony, do you want to introduce that guest to our audience today?
Yes. So per usual, we have someone that's going to just really bring another layer and some perspective to the conversation that I think will be really helpful. So our guest today is someone who actually never envisioned a life in public health. However, after being diagnosed with HIV in 2014 and spending a few years navigating his new normal, he realized that his new calling in life was one of service to his community, Black queer men. He's currently sitting as program director of Impulse Group, which some of you may be familiar with, but for those of you who aren't, it's an affinity group for the AIDS Healthcare Foundation. And it's his goal to help our community heal and flourish by creating brave spaces for open, honest, compassionate conversations, a lot like the ones we have here on Surface Level. So today, we welcome Rashid Ganga to our Surface Level family.
Rashid.
Hey guys, how are you?
Hi. Wow. Great. Thank you for coming.
I don't think I've ever heard my bio read out loud before.
How did it feel?
You are somebody.
It felt good.
Okay. You are somebody.
Listen, okay. So Rashid, today we're going to get into a pretty serious topic. But before we dive into that discussion, let's have a little bit of levity. Mm-hmm. Let's start with levity. A game that's a little bit more light. Let's ease into this conversation. So I want to do a game that Damon has introduced before previously. Well, you always in it.
Uh-oh.
And of it. So Damon has introduced a game called Worser of Two Evils.
Oh, the worst of two evils.
Lesser of two evils. Well, child, you know.
The worser.
The worser.
The worsome.
The worsome. All right, so essentially how this game is going to go is that I'm going to give you all a scenario of two, I guess, unfavorable scenarios, and you let me know what's worse. Uh-huh. Okay? So what's worse? A fashion show with no fashions or a singing career with no range? Rashid, let's start with you.
A singing career with no range, hands down. I can't sit through someone crying.
A howling cat. Damon, what do you say?
I agree, child. Anybody ever said anything about Whitney's fashions? But don't matter.
All right. What was she wearing? I don't know.
Don't know.
Tony, what do you say?
I'm going to go with the opposite, because I think a fashion show with no fashion, like, the clothes are the products. And I mean, at the end of the day, I don't know how you work around that, but you can have a singing career with no range. You know, a lot of folks with whole careers.
And do. Mm-hmm.
Big ones. I'm not going to name any names because I don't want their stands.
It's not that type of show.
Coming after
us. Right. But no, Tony, I totally agree with you, because honestly, if I had an option to be, to have a singing career with no range, I would do it. Because, you know, you get the right producer, mm-hmm. the right arrangement. Mm-hmm. It's a hit. It's number one.
But aren't they creating a range for you, though?
Yeah, that too. I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that too. Okay.
Disgusting.
All right. Next. What's worse? Bad sex with someone you really like, or great sex with someone who you cannot stand? Tony, let's start with you.
Bad sex with someone I really like. I don't. That's worse to me. I really like you, and I want the sex to be amazing. And if it's not, I just don't. I can't unsee it. So yeah, I'm gonna choose that one. Sorry,
Rashid. How about you?
I think it's the bad sex with someone that I really like, because at some point, like, the good sex is going to be bad. I'm just going to be like, I'm over you. I don't want you in my space. Bye.
Facts. Mm-hmm. Damon.
I agree with I don't ever want the bad sex anywhere in my life.
Get away from me. Go with away that, from me with Apollo. That.
Yeah.
Same. I mean, honestly, I can't say that I haven't had great sex with people who get on my nerves. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Yeah, and I pick them up, put them down.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You know? All right. So that was unanimous. All right. What's worse? Having your ex's name tattooed on your neck?
that one. There can't be anything worse.
Or having an ex who can't stop talking about you on social media. Damon, let's start with you.
Same. That one.
Same.
You tat on me?
The neck tat is worse.
Like, I don't care. I don't give one shit about what you say on social media. What difference does that make to my life? But...
Interessante.
We're gonna have to agree to disagree on that one. Because I want you to shut up and stop talking about me and like get over it, bitch. tattoo, I can like get something cute on top of it, child.
Okay.
Make it nice.
All right now.
But you talking about me and dragging the situation through the mud like as a side hobby. No.
Don't talk about my man.
Talk about my man.
My man. Rashid, how about you?
It's a tattoo for me. No. But the one thing I will say is like, if they're going to be talking about me on social media, I'm going to have someone doing PR to handle that shit. But like, you can talk as much as you want, but I don't want you on my body.
Come on, Olivia Pope. You need to put me in touch with her.
That sounds like Jordan. Do you take Jordan's answer?
I do have an Olivia Pope.
Ooh, okay, we'll chat. No, I think that the social media is worse because, you know, I can get the laser removal moment, get the tattoo taken off, but you cannot legally silence a person forever.
I don't see why y'all care.
Legally.
It's a gag order, bitch. It's called a gag order. Okay?
No, fuck these niggas.
At some point, though, they're going to look crazy.
Right.
Like, the fact that they can't give up their ex, they're going to look crazy at some point, and people are just going to tune them out.
No. Some people tune into the crazy. This is the internet. Well,
those people are also idiots.
That's why you get a gag order after a while.
Okay. All right. What's worse? Accidentally sending your parents nudes?
That.
Or having them walk in while you're having sex?
What?
My goodness. Both of those are...
No. But can't you unsend with the new iOS update?
Let's go back to a time where you could not unsend text messages.
In the last question, y'all got your tattoos removed. So I can unsend my text messages.
That's a very
message.
Common, and you know, we talking about the iOS, 15.1? That just came out like 2 months ago.
All let's I can pretend. Do is be in today.
You know what? Well, you got an Android, so you can't do it.
Bitch, I don't have no fucking Android.
Well, let's dream.
But also you just don't know. Like, you could send it and maybe take it right back, but you don't know if they like had their phone.
You can unsend it, but they can't unsee it.
Okay.
So what's your answer?
It's the undoing for me.
You can see my nude. I don't want you to see me fucking. That's disgusting.
Tony, how about you?
I oh my goodness.
You mama see you get your mouth spit in.
Well, what if that's the nude I accidentally sent? Like, either or. This, both are just horrible.
Disgusting. This, what kind of dark side of question is this?
These are really both worse.
Worse.
I'm going to say the lesser is going to be the photo. Hopefully it's not a video.
Not that. Okay, Rashid, how about you?
The lesser is definitely the photo. I don't want the sexual moment ruined. At all.
Yeah.
I gotta keep fucking.
One monkey won't step no shell.
You know, I feel like it's the worst for me would be the nude. Just because I feel like people sit with text messages. Imagine you're just
you
like
think your mama just gonna be sitting there looking at your asshole.
She's just sitting there, but she sees it. You know what I mean? It's on her phone. Like, I think that the natural reaction for a parent is that they walk in on you having sex, they immediately close the door. So it's like a flash of, like, flesh hanging out, you know? But, like, the picture feels more permanent, you know? The text feels like it's, like, not going anywhere ever.
It is, because you can delete it. with the new iOS update.
I wish I would have asked this question last season because you don't matter carrying it on. All right, so in light of Beyonce's new album,
John, that ain't gonna break my soul.
What's worse, looking jealous or crazy? Rashid, let's start with you.
Crazy. I'm okay with the jealousy thing. Crazy and cute.
Okay. Tony, you're in deep thought right now.
Cause that makes me crazy. Jealous can be crazy sometimes. But I rather look jealous than crazy because a little bit of jealousy is healthy. Not a lot of it.
Is that where we're going?
A little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Demo.
Crazy.
You have what?
I would be a little because
coming looks so crazy right now.
Because everybody's a little fucking crazy, but I'm not trying to be jealous and impressed about somebody else. Chill. Like I could just be a little crazy on my own. Because I'm like jealous, that means like nobody's business. But jealous is like I'm stuck on you, and that won't ever be the case.
Well, you might be stuck on somebody.
Won't.
Won't, don't, can't. No, I can't. I just can't bring myself to be looking crazy, unfortunately.
Looked crazy.
Who?
You.
When?
Don't matter.
Don't matter.
This is not for these people.
You always look crazy. This is after the podcast, after hours, when we leave here.
Service level after dark, dark.
Got you. All right. And finally, specifically for you, Rashid, what are you curious about?
That's a good question. I was actually thinking about that earlier. So I feel like lately our community has been getting like a lot of shine. I'm really wanting to see what's the next step. Like what's next in the evolution of us as Black queer people getting shine.
Yes, I agree. It's a lot happening for our community in terms relative to what's been happening. Mm-hmm. Obviously there's a lot more that could be happening.
Yeah.
But I'm also, it brings me joy to see a lot more of us get a platform.
It's giving, I'm like, I can and, shine. We and can shine some more.
Renaissance.
In this time of the, like, we need a lot of, like, joy. There's a lot of shit happening.
Okay. Yeah.
In this economy?
Absolutely. Listen, don't break my soul, child.
Absolutely.
Oh, baby, well, baby.
On the topic of sexual consent, when it comes to the concept of blurred consent, which is often discussed online. Now, that's exactly what it sounds like. Folks going back and forth, talking about what is and isn't consent based on a given scenario and based on their personal thoughts. And it often rejects the notion that there must be a clearly stated yes before every stage of sexual activity. Now, I want to know for the room, in your experience, how important or unimportant has it been for you to explicitly agree to every stage of your sexual activity? That's interesting now. Rashid. I have a few Rashids in my life, but Rashid, well, let's start with you on that question.
Every time my name gets butchered, it's good. So I feel like, so consent has to be explicit, right? Like it is what it is. But I feel like in our sexual encounters day to day, there's a lot of blurred lines. And I don't know that for me personally, I need it to be explicit unless we're getting into some crazy shit.
Huh.
Crazy shit.
Right. Like what's crazy?
Like safe words situations.
Oh, okay.
Okay. You know, the minds are wandering.
Right. I'm looking up in the sky. I'm like,
Inquiring minds want to think about it. Jordan, Damon?
So I don't, you know, have an explicit yes for every stage of intimacy.
Sexual activity.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've ever have. It's kind of just been like a move with the body and the spirit. You know, mm-hmm. like if I can usually tell when someone's into the moment.
Yeah.
There has been times where a sexual encounter may have like gone into a direction that was a little bit more than I bargained for that night.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for the most part, I've been around respectful partners where I'm just like, no. Mm-hmm. And we backed off. But I thought this question was really interesting because there was a California state law that was instated, I believe in like 2014 or 2015, that essentially said that you have to say yes. And that's consent. You have to say yes to every stage. And when I read about that, I was just like, are people doing that? It feels probably for not. Me that doing that takes you out of that, out of the moment of having sex.
It's a buzzkill.
Personally. But I thought that was a really interesting, I thought that was a really interesting question because I don't think that I ever thought that that was a true concern to not have nonverbal consent to every stage.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah.
I think it's important, particularly if I'm in a dominant role, because I think I like talking to people about what they do and don't like, being very specific about those things and understanding, I don't know, the whole of what they enjoy sexually. And then like from there, for me, the organic piece is playing within that. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like if you tell me you like 10 things, it's not about doing all 10. It's just like, what three am I going to surprise you with tonight? And that to me, I think is a more interesting experience. And it's also for me, like having been with people who have very, we all have very unique experiences, not just with our own bodies, but how other people have interacted with our bodies. Yeah. And you don't know, like when people have had, like sexual violence towards them or all these other things that inform how they respond or react. And I think it's very, I think it's really important to like have mm-hmm. some level of conversation around like what someone is and is not comfortable with.
Yeah.
I think it can be hot to have those conversations. Like everything doesn't have to be like, oh, we're like in the space of everything is so organic and I just want it to be. And like, even in the situations where it's just like, I really just want to explore your body and I want you to explore mine. I've said that to people. And I think that can be hot too, saying like, hey, right, I'm taking the guardrails off and let's see where it goes. Mm-hmm, right. But I think there are ways to talk about it. And this is the thing that maybe I've said a few times on the show. Like there are ways to talk about things that are less lazy than like we want to be. Like there are ways to talk about consent without saying like, can I touch you there? Yes or no.
Right. Like it shouldn't feel like,
exactly.
an onboarding.
Meeting. Exactly. It's just like, all right, now for the checklist.
All right. Let me pull this out and make sure. Cause you ain't about to be running back and
exactly.
catching me up on no case.
To your point, I think like having that conversation, just saying, hey, I want you to feel comfortable letting me know when we're approaching that line mm-hmm. so that we yeah. can like pull back. Because I think the power, we forget how powerful the word no is. I'm like, oh, I don't like this, or like, this is not for me. Mm-hmm. I think we need to like open the door and create a space where our partners feel comfortable saying, hey, I'm not okay with this. Can we mm-hmm. change yeah. the pace, change where we're going, like something.
And that doesn't kill the moment.
Right.
Like, that's the thing. When someone's like, oh, actually, I don't enjoy that. People are like, oh, you don't like me. No, 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 no. Just this moment's not okay with me. Like, let's figure out something else. Maybe that moment.
Right.
Right.
Touch me there.
Touch me there. Don't touch me there.
Exactly.
Like, you got to guide people.
And also, never touch me there.
Never Ooh. Touch me there.
Where's that place?
I don't know. Jordan
she
has
got no places. That's lying. No,
like, for me, like, I'll start by saying this, that the more that I've matured and navigated my sexuality, the more I've realized just how important it is to have verbal affirmative consent. Mm-hmm. And you know, I joke around because I slap the girls' butts and stuff like that. Like, but that's probably problematic mm-hmm. To a stranger. I don't know about you girls, but can I slap your butt?
you can slap my butt. Yeah, that's consent.
Yes, okay, right.
You can slap his butt.
And what about yours? Sometimes, depending on how you feel.
Yeah.
But no, and also when I think about that, though, it's just as important on my part and anyone that mm-hmm. I deal with. And when I look back over my life and the sexual experiences.
And I think things over.
When I look back over my life and think things over, like, I don't think that I've ever experienced a non-consensual sexual moment. Mm-hmm. Now, have I willingly participated in activity that I didn't feel great about? Kind of like Jordan was mentioning earlier. Sure. Have I been in circumstances where, you know, I got myself into something that I didn't quite sign up for. Absolutely. Same as Jordan. But in those cases, I've either removed myself or I've decided to stick around and that's on me. And now I also thought about, am I guilty of perhaps burying a traumatic experience?
I was just going to say that when you just said those words, I was just like, it stuck out to me that you said that you didn't want that, but you stuck through it.
Well, that I've gotten myself into like a situation where it was like, oh, this is not quite what I signed up for, but I stuck around for it. And nothing specifically, but right. That got me to thinking like, well, have I perhaps potentially buried some traumatic experience out of my mind that I'm not thinking of in this moment that happened when I was younger? And I think that could also be the case. But I'd like to think that if there was something that I recall, like I wouldn't be afraid to speak on it on this platform as I've done with everything else. But for the most part, I feel like I've had good judgment and discernment, but there possibly have been cases. I just think that consent is important now. So let's switch gears a bit. So members of the LGBTQIA+ community, members of LGBTQIA+ communities in the United States face higher rates of sexual violence, more than just general populations. And if you want to go and do some research on that, you can find that online. And so I want to talk about and ask the room again, like, what unique factors do we think lead to more sexual assault between queer men and or specifically Black queer men, if you want to go there? Rasheed, do you want to start?
Sure. So I there's a couple of things that I think play into it. One is, so with porn, like there's a perception of what sex is supposed to be. And so everyone's like watching porn and they're like, all right, cool. That's exactly what I'm going to do because that is what people are watching. And that's how most of us are introduced to sex. No one ever actually really sits down and talks to us, especially as Black queer men. So I think that that's a huge chunk of it. But I also just think like, I think for a lot of us, it's not until we get beyond our 30s, like our mid 30s, that we start to actually know what it is that we really like. So we kind of like open we are willing to explore or willing to experience different things. And then that creates this like kind of gray area where things are happening and like, we're not okay with it, but we're like, I'm still not sure who I am and what I like. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think that in addition to being more experimental, I think that something that's, I won't say unique to the queer male experience, but I will say that it's prevalent in the queer male experience is hookup culture. And it's very interesting because I was watching, like back in 2020, I May Destroy You. There was a gay Black character on the show and he experienced sexual assault and he had, he went over to a hookup, didn't know the person prior to, had sex with the person that he agreed to have sex with. But then after they finished having sex, he wanted to go home. The guy wanted round two and he forced himself onto him for that second experience. And I think that when you look at that situation, I think that sometimes queer men associate a level of shame around hooking up, or anonymous sex and things like that. So when those trauma situations happen,
people don't talk about it.
And I think that on the opposite hand, the offenders, the attackers, they understand that dynamic. They understand that it's anonymous. They understand that that person doesn't know their name and that they'll probably never see them again. And they take advantage of those things and they force themselves onto people. And I think that that's just one aspect of sort of the community that I think that opens people up to those experiences probably more so than experiences where you may have built a rapport and a trust with a person. Not saying that those people can't also, you know, turn dark sided and, you know, and also be on the violent side of things. But I think that plays a role. And also think that queer men and Black men specifically, I think, have a hard time seeing themselves as victims, right? You have this experience and you would rather say that it was an unpleasant experience than actually saying that you were sexually assaulted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that a lot of times we downplay the experiences that we have because we don't see ourselves as victims, or we look at it and say, well, I went over there and I knew what I was getting myself into and I didn't speak up enough, so I have to own some of this responsibility. So therefore, mm-hmm. I'm just going to live with this. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I think that can also be a contributing factor.
Yeah. No, it's interesting.
I think it's important that we can actually kind of recognize, like, when, as queer people, like, our spaces were always the clubs and the bathhouses, right? Like, that's where we always felt as though we were able to really be ourselves. So when it comes to these sexual experiences, like, when things don't necessarily go the way that we want, we kind of chalk it up to, all right, cool, this might just be a bad experience, and we're not really looking at the trauma aspect of it, because there's so much of, like, I'm able to be me. Mm-hmm. In that moment, that we're holding on to that little bit of celebration and forgetting about all the trauma that came with it. Mm.
Agreed.
Yeah. Now, I think it's interesting that the two things I wrote down were similar to what Jordan was saying, but for different reasons. I think, one, the queer experience always has so much shame attached to it.
Yep.
So when you think about being a young queer person, and you're you're the twink fresh out on the scene, and then you have older guys who will,
or not,
will come prey on you, try and get with you. And I think part of the experience is knowing that you have people who are still working through who they are, who still may not be comfortable with their identity, who still have a shame attached to their identity, so you can take advantage of people who mm-hmm. you know will never talk about it.
That's true. Yeah.
Because that person isn't out to their friends, isn't out to their family, or may have just been coming out and doesn't have the language to even express the things that they like, don't like, enjoy. So then you meet these people that sometimes take advantage of that, and just know that, well, nobody's going to ever fucking know. And I think that's something that, as especially younger queer people and some older queer people who are come out, we hate that term, but come out later in life, I think that's a factor. And I also think that generally people don't understand the concept of, like, looking and not touching. Like, Tony mentioned, like slapping butts or whatever. It's a funny thing, but I was on a trip yesterday. I was in Houston and I met a friend of a friend, mm-hmm. and I went to shake his hand. And he goes, well, I'm a hugger. Are you okay with that?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times people just go in for a hug or mm-hmm. go in for this thing, or, like, even if a guy is maybe he works out and he's, like, sexual on the internet, and mm-hmm. you see all these pictures of this shirtless man, and now you feel like, oh, when I see him, I can just, like, rub his chest and say hello, yeah. like, or, like, greet people in a way that it's taking advantage of what you think their persona is,
right,
but you have no idea what their actual connection is to their body when you're there in person.
Right.
And I think that we're visual men and all these things, but, like, people aren't separate, like, recognizing the full humanity of people and the full experiences that they have. And just, like, even just going back to that smaller moment that I had in Houston this week, he was just like, I'm a hugger, but is that okay with you? Mm-hmm, yeah. And I think that that's something that doesn't happen so often. People are just like, I just hug. Like, well, what if I don't want your arms wrapped around me? What if that triggers something from my past? Right. And within our communities, like, it's queer men, like, we like being more affectionate and we pride mm-hmm. ourselves on that sometimes, but when it comes to the physical piece of it, people aren't always ready for that. And I think it's something that we need to recognize. And one more thing, I know I'm going on for a long time, but there's a thing that Jordan said a couple times this season, is that when we talk about assault, people don't want, like, the big scary title. And we talk about racism and we talk about all these things. There's so much range to making a person feel uncomfortable, and that you've moved past their space of yes and no, that it can be hugging them without their permission, or it can be all the way to rape. And I think that people, because they haven't raped someone, they feel like, oh, I've never made someone uncomfortable, so therefore it doesn't matter what I'm doing.
Right.
And I think that recognizing that whole range and spectrum of experience is exceptionally important in this conversation.
Yeah, I feel like there's a level of respecting one's space mm-hmm. and boundaries that doesn't always happen. And people don't always take the time to to ask themselves the question before they go barging in, hugging mm-hmm. on someone and mm-hmm. getting into someone's space. Mm-hmm. So I think people just all need to take a step back mm-hmm. and ask yourself the question first mm-hmm. and then act.
Yeah.
And that's not happening. And I mean, I thought about this particular question, like I went back to the first question, because I think that when we talked about that blurred consent, this has a lot to do with that. And I also thought about that, the fact that I don't know that the factors are all that unique, because a big chunk of why this happens is rooted in power dynamics. And it's oftentimes modeled after heteronormative behavior, mm-hmm. that masculine versus feminine energy. But although when it comes to these situations, I want to be clear that it's not always the more masculine person that's the aggressor.
That part. Mm-hmm.
And so it just made me think about that. But I was like, I think a lot of what, I think it was Jordan, when you were speaking, that I was like, it's giving, like what a woman goes through when she's like, I feel like I just need to sit with it. Like, what did I not do right? What did, mm-hmm. you know, that's a lot of, like, when I hear women that have been raped or what have you, they always put the fault inward to them and think about what they were doing or not doing right that made that happen to them.
Right. Mm. Because the society teaches you, like, okay, this is how you can avoid this happening.
Right.
As opposed to saying, like, no, this person is actually just inappropriate.
The dark side.
And you don't need to navigate life through fear that someone is going to give you, like, non-consensual touch. I remember I had an experience where I was just playing it off and kind of like laughing about it, but I was kind of uncomfortable. It's mm-hmm. happened several times in my life where I've met gay men who've just been like very touchy. And I've always just been like, you know, I try to be like, you know, you play it off. You're kind of like, this is mm-hmm. strange. And I brought it up to you all about mm-hmm. a singular situation. Yeah. And I think it was you, Damon, that was just like, tell that person that you are uncomfortable and that you want to cut off all communication moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was like a light bulb moment for me, because I didn't even think of that as a possibility before that.
Yeah.
I was fully ready to just accept the fact that I would have to always sort of
be uncomfortable,
go like this, you know, around that person.
You know what I think?
Like, what so, can I Jordan, do to question, avoid it?
Question yeah. for you. Have you ever sat with like that moment and thought about what was it in you that prevented you from saying something right then and there?
I think that what prevented me from speaking up right then and there is that I didn't think that that person was coming from a violent place. And I think that when you add certain labels to people and people are known for certain labels, it can do real world damage to their day-to-day life. And this person, I actually enjoyed them otherwise. I just thought that they didn't need to touch me as much.
Right.
And I thought that there may have been some attraction on that side that wasn't reciprocated on my side. And I really didn't say anything out of compassion for what speaking up could do to them.
Mm-hmm. You know, okay. I think... Oh, sorry. Go, Rasheed.
No, because the reason I was asking is because I've been in similar situations to that, and I realized relatively recently, actually, that a lot of it for me was a fear of rejection. Like, I may enjoy this person's company and like hanging out with them, and like I'm afraid that like me putting a stop to like, okay, don't touch me this much, like I really don't like being touched, means that like they're gonna think as though like I don't want them in my space.
Yeah,
it's just like, I just don't want you in my space that way.
I get that too.
Makes sense. Yeah,
I get that too.
And I was just gonna add, I think that as queer men, or as people, not even just queer men, people generally that experience either being touched in a way they want to, or feeling like they're pushed beyond the level of consent that they've given to a person, are often investing energy in this investigation of what did I do wrong? Mm-hmm. Where like maybe if you are to take some ownership of energy, it's really in that communicating uncomfortable things to someone else. Because I think that, and I know the experience you're talking about, was way more valuable. It's just like, instead of taking the energy to like, be like, okay, well, I need to be uncomfortable, or did I like do a thing that made them think this was warranted, or I was inviting them, when it's just like, really, if I'm going to put any energy of my own self, which I don't even feel like you should have the responsibility to do. But if you are, it's just to look somebody in the face and be like, hey, this is not okay. And this is, and to your point, Jordan, it's not okay in the way that, like, I'm trying to show up and destroy your life. But like, hey, you're someone that is intercepted in my life. I'm communicating this is not okay. Our relationship maybe is not going to be the same, but maybe you shouldn't go forward in your life this way. Because I think in when we talk about the spectrum of experience, it's just like there are moments where you're like, okay, I want to communicate something to someone so that they can think differently going forward. We're not talking about rape.
But
I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is like in these moments, it's like, you're making me very uncomfortable. Think about that.
In those moments.
I also think if you address it head on, if you can bring yourself to do so, it allows potentially for it not to fester, for you not to resent them, for you to see if there's a change in behavior,
right?
And go from there. If there's a change, then it's like you told them and they are moving differently, and so now you can continue being friends, or they just completely ignored you and tried it again, and then that's when it's given. All right, girl, good night.
I know, but I still think to an extent, and I agree. You know, that's something I definitely want to work on, is being able to communicate my boundaries more explicitly and in the moment with people. But then again, it still puts the onus in the person's hands to tell someone else that they're uncomfortable, when I think that we should put the onus in the other person's hands to say, I'm going to establish these boundaries for myself and how I interact with people, period. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's where I would love for people to get to. Especially within the queer community, you know, we all went to the clubs growing up and we've all been like grabbed and caressed, and you look back and it's like a shadow that's running away. Mm-hmm. You don't even know who did it. Mm-hmm. Like, we've all been in those scenarios. And I think that we've become conditioned to the fact that like, it's this a very handsy community, mm-hmm. but doesn't mean that we need to figure out ways that we can avoid it. I think that we need to come up with ways for people to
you're establishing boundaries for yourself.
I think it's a two-pronged thing that's happening. Like, I absolutely think that people need to get their own shit together and like understand how to approach people. I also think that there are going to be a lot of dark-sided people in the world, and like when it happens, I think it's better for us to say, be clear that like this is not okay, versus the averse, when like we smile or you giggle and you move away.
We've got to arm ourselves.
Right. Exactly.
Then it's almost like if you know like want to take up kickboxing or something to protect yourself, like you got to arm yourself.
Sometimes you got
to
whoop these niggas ass.
So I want to add something. So like, so I define myself as an advocate, right? Like, and for me, an advocate is a person who is about changing culture. I think we each have that in us. And by actually taking that step and say, hey, no, this isn't cool with me. Like, don't touch me. I don't want you touching me like that. And you shouldn't do that to somebody else. That actually puts us in a space to actually impact the greater culture, because you're that first step in creating or changing whatever is happening in our society.
I like that.
It's powerful. That's very powerful.
Yeah. All right. I think let's shift to something that's maybe a little more black and white than gray. Mm-hmm. So sexual assault in queer communities has been, as we've been discussing, quite gray. It's quite a fluid discussion. But earlier this year, Ed Buck, a 67-year-old businessman and former activist, was sentenced to 30 years for providing methamphetamines to two black victims who suffered fatal overdoses in his home. It was later revealed that Ed Buck drugged black men often and would at times sexually assault them, whether they were conscious or unconscious. And then one of the aspects of this case that really stood out were the deaths of Jamel Moore in 2007 and Timothy Dean in 2019, and that they went largely ignored by the LAPD district attorney, Jackie Lacey, citing not enough evidence. What barriers do we think are blocking sexual assault against black men from being taken seriously? Jordan, let's start with you this time.
I mean, it's no different than the same barriers that that get in the way of doctors treating black pregnant women.
Bitch, you got my answer.
Oh, with the same care. You know, I just think this country doesn't really value Black lives. And Ed Buck obviously understood that. Mm-hmm. He was obviously savvy enough to understand how the culture in the U.S. works.
Yeah.
And that's why he specifically targeted Black, sometimes poor, sometimes sex workers, mm-hmm. sometimes people who were suffering with drug addiction. Mm-hmm. Those were the people that he lured into his space. And he did that intentionally because he knew that he could inject them with drugs, whether they asked for it or not. He mm-hmm. knew that if they were unconscious, he could have sex with them and there would be no consequences. And for a while, it wasn't any consequences. I mean, you just said that the first man died in 2017. The second man died in 2019. It's 2022. Mm-hmm. He finally got sentenced and convicted. It's just, I think that Black pain is just so deprioritized. Mm-hmm. And this is, we all know this conversation to be true. And I think that people like Ed Buck and attackers and extremely violent people like Ed Buck understands that by harming Black bodies means that they are actually playing it safe mm-hmm. rather than harming white bodies. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really what it comes down to. It wasn't a priority for the Los Angeles deputy department or sheriff's department. No one cared mm-hmm. until the community started to uprise about it. And that's what we always have to do, right? We always have to create a hashtag and create social chatter and like force them to like respond.
Right.
As opposed to just actually being humans and caring about human life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 100%. Like, when I thought about this whole scenario of what just went down, like, it comes down to what we typically see over and over again, is that the system just isn't equitable. You know, we Black queer folks don't get the same level of care that our white counterparts do. And so I actually found an article on blackyouthproject.com, and it was titled Queer Desirability Politics and Its Implications on Consent. It was a very sophisticatedly written moment. I think, mm-hmm. Damon, your lane, child. But when you think about desirability politics, you think about Black women, you think about Black queer men. Listen to what I'm about to say. So desirability politics at its core is a politic that revolves around patriarchy and idolized masculinity. Under the ideology of patriarchy is one of sexual dominance, control, and conquest, what is popularly described as rape culture. And under colonial understanding, patriarchal ideologies hold that women, non-men, and queer folks are lesser objects to be used at the disposal of white men. And that is a direct result of European colonization and the institution of American slavery.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this whole case right now, it's like, what I think about is how can we be taken seriously mm-hmm. when there's nothing in place of which to accomplish that notion?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shame that someone like Ed Buck could habitually commit crimes like this and be walking around as a free man.
Walking around.
And so it has everything to do with power and privilege of the white man.
And, you know, my original answer was literally the exact same thing Jordan said, but as you all were talking, I thought about another thing about the intersectional experience in America, because mm-hmm. Ed Buck is a white queer man, and we always like the queer community. This is Please. The prime example why Black queer people, brown queer people, Asian queer people do not feel like we are part of this community. Because you have a person who is a part of this thing, who still wields the privilege of being a white man to do all these things to people in his home repeatedly.
Repeatedly.
Child, it's crazy. One of the dogs, it's crazy to one me. Of the fucking dogs could die at my house and the police will be at the door taking my ass away.
Yeah.
And like, this man has multiple grown ass men dying in his house and mm-hmm. everybody's just like, oh, not that's a coincidence.
So crazy.
A free man walking around.
Rashid, anything to add there?
The other side to that coin is that same power dynamic that we're talking about and like this access to privilege also conditions us as queer Black people or like just Black people in general to live in this culture of silence. So like as queer men especially, like we tend to hold on to our trauma within ourselves, thinking that it's just our story and that we can't share it. Mm. And I think that then leads to like a lot of stigma that's associated with it. So like when we do experience these moments, like if we were in a situation where we're being assaulted, we don't feel confident enough to speak our truth and to name it, because we're afraid of how society's going to look at us.
Yeah.
And I think that's a huge part that like we don't actually, I think right now we're actually starting to come out of that a little bit, like just tiny baby steps. But I think we need to actually start like naming it in order to dismantle the whole system.
Yeah, and I think that's it. We've said this a few times this season. We've had amazing guests, and I think that's the reason why we do the thing we're doing here today.
Yeah.
It's just like, you name it, you speak about it, you talk about the things that are often hidden or rushing under the table, may they be Black issues, queer issues, or the intersectional ones. And I think this is something that, to me, was a quite powerful conversation and something to acknowledge today. So I'm happy we were here. Mm-hmm. And Rasheed, we just wanted to kick one more question to you just about the work that Impulse or AIDS Healthcare Foundation is doing to create awareness around sexual health and community, and just any of the initiatives you want to highlight that you and the teams that you work with are working on.
Sure. So Impulse is all about creating a culture where gay men can live healthier, happier lives, and whether that means being able to like have sexual experiences that are affirming, or being sexually safe, or learning how to manage substance use, or like handling mental health issues. I think for us, like those are some of our core values, and like we're doing a bunch of different things that I don't know that we publicize well enough, but I know that we. For us, it's very important, especially as AHF, like we sit in the space as advocates and at least start the conversations to help change the culture of our society at large. Like we can't do this work by ourselves, and we need the everyday man to jump in and to like lend his voice, because the more voices that there are helps to amplify the mission and helps to actually really create change, especially as institutions. There's only so much we can do, and that people are like, okay, they're just doing their normal yelling and screaming. Mm-hmm. We need to empower our community to say and do more.
Amazing. And Rasheed, where can people find out more about you or more about Impulse Group? Just any directive or social links?
Yeah. So the best way to follow Impulse is on our Instagram page. So Impulse Group as a whole, our Instagram page is Impulse United. And then in our various cities around the world, it's usually Impulse Group and then the name of the city. And we're in 27 cities globally now.
Amazing. So, all right. Well, thank you so much. We really appreciated you coming on today. And this, yes, like so many conversations this season have been unique and refreshing and just really, really valuable.
Yeah.
But that is all the time we have this week. This season, we're raising money for the Ali Forney Center, an organization committed to protecting LGBTQI+ youth from homelessness and empowering them to live independently. One of the ways you can help is by joining our Surface Level Small Talk conversation on Tuesday, July 26th. Small Talk is a live audio platform where you can join an intimate discussion with us. 100% of the tips we receive will go directly to the Ali Forney Center. For details on how to RSVP for Small Talk discussion, visit surfacelevelpodcast.com. And remember, stay curious.